Thompson Guitars makes handcrafted instruments in Oregon. Their guitars are built with select tone woods, including Brazilian rosewood. Go to pktguitars.com for more information about their different models and appointments available from their custom shop.
I'm getting more and more comfortable with trying to just be myself, you know, be myself in playing, not try too many things there that are too outside for me, you know what I mean? But just to be, and then same thing with like my songwriting and singing and all of that. Try to have my voice and to find, you know, to stay within that authentic my voice, I guess, you know.
Welcome to the Travis Book Happy Hour Podcast. I'm Travis Book. This episode is brought to you by Thompson Guitars, makers of fine instruments, handmade with love in Sisters, Oregon. The podcast is presented by Americana Vibes and The Bluegrass Situation, and our show is part of the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. You can dive into all things roots music anytime at thebluegrasssituation.com. Nashville in the mid-2000s was full of aspiring bluegrass musicians from my generation. People were starting bands, landing gigs as sidemen, and living in large, cheap houses on the east side of town. Almost nightly, we'd gather at pickin' parties that sometimes more closely resembled what you'd see at a fraternity. One of the people I met and played with during these heady years was Luke Bula. I was in awe of his professionalism and his palmares, and struck by his calm demeanor. It had been almost 15 years since we'd last played together, and I was delighted when he reached out about joining me for the happy hour. This episode was recorded live at 185 King Street in Brevard, North Carolina on May 5th, 2024.
Live from 185 King Street, the backyard of Brevard, North Carolina, it's the Travis Book Happy Hour. Brought to you by Americana Vibes and The Bluegrass Situation. Tonight, we will have an appearance by Casey Driesen and featuring special happy hour guest, Luke Bula. And now, your host, Travis Book.
All right, man.
All right.
Have fun.
Thanks, Bill. I appreciate that. Big thanks to Bill. I'm really excited about tonight's show. I've run in the similar circles with this amazing musician for a very long time. But being as that we are both very busy, we don't get to see each other very often. So I was thrilled when I figured out that our paths could cross. Please make him welcome to the 185 King Street stage. That's Mr. Luke Bula.
Thank you. Thank you. Good to see you, Travis.
Yeah, man.
Yes, sir. All right, 1, 2, 3.
Search of the words I love. She's a rose with no room to grow. She's a light in the night with nowhere to shine. She's a partner that nobody chose. She's tried and she's tried and she's tried to keep on trying. And everything she tried fell apart. Tried and she's tried and she's tried to keep on loving. Every man she loved broke her heart. She's a melody in search of the words I love. She's a rose with no room to grow. She's a light in the night with nowhere to shine. She's a partner that nobody chose. Thank you. stumbled and stumbled and she's fallen. No one picked her up when she fell. She stood up with hope up that someone would show up. Someday you never can tell. She's a melody in search of the words I love you. She's a rose with no room to grow. She's a light in the night with nowhere to shine. She's a partner that nobody chose. She's a light in the night with nowhere to shine. She's a refuge where nobody goes. She's lonesome and nobody knows.
Oh, thank you. Well, thank you. That song was written by Guy Clark and Rodney Crowell around about 1981. I made my first full-length solo album back in 2016. And thank you, thank you. Oh, you are the ones who got it. Thank you. I was really lucky to get Brian Sutton to produce it for me, and we were listening to a bunch of Guy Clark songs and came across that one. I had not heard that one before. He discovered it for that. But as soon as I heard it, I knew I wanted to record it. This next one is an original that I wrote this about an experience I had. I grew up in a family band. I started singing on stage when I was 4 years old, and I started playing fiddle on stage when I was 7. The family band formed just shortly after I started playing fiddle, and we went and did a state and county fair showcase and then went and played music full-time for about 13 years after that. We had a couple of tour buses. The first bus we had was a 1948 Greyhound Silver Sides. It was converted on the inside to be a motorhome. You know, the outside was a strange brown color. I don't know what was up with that. But we had that thing for a couple of years, and my parents decided they wanted to paint it one winter, and so they put it in the shop. And they picked out from these little color swatches, you know, they picked out like a desert rose, metallic, some or another, and some other color. And it came out of the shop, and it was straight up pink and purple. It was embarrassing enough being in a family band, you know what I mean? You know, we graduated from that bus to a 1963 Silver Eagle that used to belong to Johnny Paycheck. It was also a strange brown color for some reason, I don't know why. But that bus was awesome. We were all over the country. We'd leave our where I grew up in northeastern Washington State, and way out in the middle of nowhere. And we would leave from up there about the end of May, and we would not go home until the end of October. So we'd spend about 6 months out of the year on the road. And when we were home, my aunt was the superintendent of the elder care facility in our little hometown. And my sister and I played a lot of fiddle together. And on Sunday afternoons when we were home, we would go take our fiddles over and visit with folks and play music for them. And there was one time I was over there, and I met this lady. She was in the memory care unit, and having a conversation with her had a really big impact on me. And years later, I wrote this song about it. I could see her searching.
Are they healed or are they bleeding slow?
Thank you. Okay. Well, for the last 15 years, I've gotten to play in Lyle Lovett's bands, the large band and the acoustic group. And yeah, I tell you what, it's just been an incredible experience and such an honor to get to share the stage with Lyle and all the rest of those guys in his bands. They're just incredible musicians and legends in their own right. And one of the coolest things about being in Lyle's band for me was getting to know Guy Clark from a different perspective, you know, kind of through Lyle's eyes, through his lens. And I had the really good fortune of getting to know Guy personally a little bit before he passed away, and got to write a song with him, and Lyle always asked me to play that song in his set almost every time we did a show together for years and years. I'll do that one here in a little while. But this is one that I first started singing with Brian Sutton, actually, years and years ago, just about a couple of years before I started in Lyle's band. And then Lyle recorded this one for a Guy Clark tribute album called This One's for Him. It's a really great tribute album made by Tamara Saviano. This is another Guy Clark song, one of my favorites. I say that about whichever one is playing, you know. I wish I had a dime for every bad time, but the bad times always seem to keep the change. And you've been all alone, so you know what I'm saying. And when all you can recall is the pain, just you wait until tomorrow when you wake up with me at your side and find a head and lying about nothing. And I wouldn't trade a tree for the way I feel about you in the morning. Anyhow, I love you.
day it gets just a little bit better. Half of getting there is knowing where I've been before. I'm sure you understand, 'cause I ain't your first man. And when you feel like running for the back door, don't just you wait until tomorrow when you wake up with me at your side and find I hadn't lied about nothing. I wouldn't trade a tree for the way I feel about you in the morning. Anyhow, I love you. Just you wait until tomorrow when you wake up with me at your side and find that lied about nothing. I wouldn't trade a tree for the way I feel about you in the morning. Anyhow, I love you.
Oh, Guy Clark.
Well, you know how I do things around here. My name's on the marquee, so I insist upon singing a song or two every night. And hopefully, when I do, it can hold a candle to what just went down. Oh, man. I can tell you're applauding because you're also hoping for the best. Very supportive of you. I appreciate it. Got to tune a little bit.
Yeah, that does happen. Especially with an audience like this, you know, who knows what they're listening to.
Yeah, you've played with Tim O'Brien, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like I could be like, you've played with so and so, and you'd be like, yeah, of course I have. I'm Luke Bulla. I played with everybody.
I did. Yeah, I have played with a lot of different artists and bands over the years, for sure.
The reason I asked about Tim O'Brien is that it's a great Tim O'Brien says, "We tune because you care. We don't really care," or something like that.
I like that. He says that mandolin is Italian for out of tune. Yeah. Mark O'Connor calls the mandolin the 8 strings of pain.
And he's still so good at it.
Yes.
A little too long to be away. A little too late. Sun is breaking out of the cold. Morning still hours from getting too old. Just as the world's taking shape, help me feel better than I did yesterday. Some things just change with time. See how it looks as I'm walking on down the line. A little too much hanging around. A little too much just feeling down.
And I'm just a little too tired of this little old town. If I don't move on, my soul ain't gonna last. Feeling a little too broken in two. Half of me's gone, and the rest don't know what to do. A little too much hanging. Just feeling down, and I'm just a little too tired of this little old town. I'm getting older, a little too fast. If I don't move on, my soul ain't gonna last. Feeling a little too broken in two. Say half of me's gone, and the rest don't know what to do. A little too much, just feeling down, and I'm just a little too tired of holding my ground. Just a little too tired of this little old, and I feel like I'm down to the wire. This little old, I'm just a little too tired of this little old time. Luke Buller on the fiddle. I started playing that song and I realized, I thought to myself, you know, man, I was like, I've been in this business for a very long time. I should know better than to make it about me. Really, I needed to play that song so that we could all hear this man play the fiddle. Obviously, that's what we were doing right there. You left your mandolin at home, though, right?
That's right, I did. I sure did. The eight strings of pain. Years ago, I moved to Nashville when I was 19 from Washington State, and started playing with Ricky Skaggs right away. He kind of created a position in the band for me to play twin fiddles with Bobby Hicks, and that was a really great learning experience. And I got to play all these incredible festivals that I had not been to before, you know, I was just a kid. And but I got to go to the Ralph Stanley's Festival and heard this guy named Frank Newsom sing this song. And this was years and years ago. This is probably 15 years ago or so, at least, maybe more. And I don't know if Frank is still around or not, but he's a singing preacher, and he was just, I mean, wonderful to listen to, just amazing to listen to. And now that I've talked him up, I'm going to try to sing this. I wasn't supposed to do that either. This is...
You'd think we know better.
Right, right. No, I got to record this, finally am. This is a beautiful tune called Gone Away With a Friend.
Gone to the face of an old saint of God. I thought your race had ended, your life crown separated for the present. But soon to live again, and he's only gone away with a friend, gone away with a friend, someone closer than a brother. With somebody who loves you more than children, dad or mother, and he holds your very soul in the palm of his hand. Let it read on my tombstone, gone away with a friend. He's a constant companion through love, joy, and pain. All my hopes and cares, Lord, I hold in his dear name. And when my soul breaks free from the ties that hold me here, I'm going away with Jesus, no other friend so dear. Gone away with a friend, someone closer than a brother. With somebody who loves you more than children, dad or mother, and he holds your very soul in the palm of his hand. Let it read on my tomb, gone away with a friend.
Thank you. Thank you.
If you're enjoying this show with Luke Bula, check out episode 3 with Matt Rieger and Andy Dunnigan, episode 17 with Tim O'Brien, or episode 25 with Jim Lauderdale. Thanks for listening, and after the show, be sure to leave a rating and review. Now back to the show.
We have so much good music planned for you tonight. I would like to ask Luke a few questions, though, if that's all right, with the assembled audience. So, Luke, you mentioned you started playing, making music when you were 4, family band. Why'd you pick up the fiddle?
Well, I was born into a musical family, so I wasn't given a choice about playing music. I was given a choice about which instrument I was going to play. And so I heard, I remember hearing Mark O'Connor play on a recording when I was like, I mean, I was right about that age, 4, I think 4 or 5 years old, and I just it sounded cool to me and sounded like something I wanted to try.
And you fiddled for years. You got into the You got into the contest scene.
That's right, yeah.
Which is it's a whole thing.
Yeah.
It's a whole vibe.
Oh yeah.
Did we talk a little bit about what that scene is like?
Well, yeah. So I didn't realize when I first started playing, I just didn't know about other young people. I hadn't been around other young people that played until I went to the National Old Time Fiddlers Contest, which is held in Weezer, Idaho. I was seven when I'd only been playing for a few months when I went there, and I saw all these other young people that were playing, and I was like super inspired. I was just really inspired. I wanted to keep playing after that, you know, after seeing all these other young people doing it, and they had an outlet for it too. You know, we had the family band, so we were always playing on stage and in front of people, so that was always good, you know. But the contest thing was a little different. It gave me an opportunity to really, just something to practice for and something to focus on, and it's a little bit different than like bluegrass fiddling, you know. Texas fiddling is kind of a different style. It's a little bit slower, it's more even. There's a lot of eighth notes. The melodies are all pretty much laid out in eighth notes. There's a lot of passing tones, accidentals, and whereas bluegrass, you know, generally faster, more double stops, more slur, more notes per bow, that kind of thing.
Right, and I'm sure you wouldn't tell us because you're a humble guy. But I'm gonna let everyone know that you then proceeded to win every age division and finally became the Grand Master Fiddle Champion.
Yeah.
And the youngest Grand Master Fiddle Champion ever at that time.
At the time, yeah. I set that record, and then Alex Hargraves came behind me and beat it.
Is that really what happened?
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
he's really good at fiddle.
He sure is. Yeah.
I think it is. Yeah, that's so classic. Actually, everything in our world now is in relation to Billy Strings, which is fine because he's amazing. So do you, you know, it's a little time has passed, doesn't matter how much time has passed, but do you feel like that's still like something you kind of have to live up to? You know what I mean? Like, how does that feel now?
Oh, the contest thing?
Being a grandmaster champion.
Oh,
is that
yeah.
something like people still hold you to a high standard? Do you feel like when you pull that fiddle out, people are looking at you like, what's this grandmaster going to do?
yeah, actually. I mean, it's a, you know, I try not to talk too much before I play, and that way I don't have to. I feel like I have to back a bunch of stuff up. You know,
well, this is the wrong gig for that.
No, I do. I mean, you know, it's a special thing. The contest thing is funny. It's unique to fiddling. It seems like, and it's this fiddle contest thing. I mean, fiddle tunes are amazing. They're so much fun to play, and each one has its unique thing. And so to get to play those kind of against each other in a it's subjective. It's totally subjective. And so there's really not, it's about preferences and, you know, people's opinions and that kind of thing. So, I mean, there's generally like a playing standard that people, the top five will be, you know, up to a certain standard for sure. But,
right.
You know, I mean, but the placement in the contest is less important than the whole experience. It's really about the whole experience. It's kind of a family vibe, you know, kind of an extended dysfunctional family vibe.
With all the competitiveness that comes with
right,
it.
Right, yeah. It's actually less competitive than, I mean, people compete against each other, but there really is a, like a mutual, all the teachers, you know, that are judging or their students are competing or, they, you know, they teach and people share tunes and that's like it's a cool community kind of thing. But yeah, the contest part of it is a little bit, it's a little strange. It's like, you know, especially for people who don't you do it very often.
Yeah, that's so cool. I have I play with a fiddle player, and he's not a contest fiddle player, and it's always interesting for me to hear a little bit about that side of it. So you mentioned earlier that you moved to Nashville initially to play with Ricky Skaggs in his band, and he essentially, like you said, created a position for you in that band. That had to have been, I mean, at the time, that's kind of like the top of the. That was the top of the heap if you're a fiddle player. And playing twin with Bobby Hicks.
Yeah,
doesn't get any better than that, man.
Yeah, it was incredible. I mean, I remember, you know, I was just a kid. I mean, just a few months in Nashville, and Ricky asked me to join the band. We went to the Grammys and all this crazy stuff. You know, it's been all downhill from there. No,
that's great. You've played with like a who's who of acoustic and bluegrass and roots in country music. I remember seeing, I think one of my first impressions of you was playing with Jerry Douglas at Telluride in sort of his newly formed band. And it was so cool. It was so, it was like acoustic fusion music. And I just remember being blown away by you and everybody else that was in that band. So you played with all kinds of people. What have been some of your favorite gigs and favorite people to work with?
Oh, man. You know, I think probably getting to be a part of the Telluride House Band for a couple of years was probably the, you know, one of the greatest for me. I mean, probably one of my, yeah.
I'm sorry. I just made it about me. I love that answer so much. I love that band. It's so great.
Yeah. I mean, well, and I grew up listening to that record, you know. It's like, it's funny. I knew I was playing in Jerry's band, and he asked me to be the fiddle player for that band, and I was like, I went in the other room, jumped up and down and screamed for a little bit, you know, and came back and said, okay, sure, cool, whatever, I'll do it, it's fine. I already pretty much knew all the stuff because I studied that record, you know, the Telluride Sessions, the Strength in Numbers band, and went over to Bayless House to rehearse. I didn't really have to learn much of anything because I already knew all their stuff. Yeah. Already knew all their solos and everything. It was pretty funny. Actually, the second year, I decided that I was going to write a song and make them learn it. So I did.
The hubris.
It did. Oh, yeah.
I love it.
Really got them. No,
That's great.
They did. They were gracious about it. They learned it and recorded it with me, too.
That's amazing. What? Just a couple more questions. We'll get back to music. What do you think is like the most, we'll get you off the hot seat. What's like one of the most important things you've learned working as a sideman and supporting musicians?
Oh, man. To listen. Yeah, I think to listen probably the most. I mean, you asked that question kind of in the frame of reference as a sideman, I guess. I mean, this is sort of true of any kind of performance or being on stage or whatever. But I mean, I'm getting more and more comfortable with trying to just be myself. You know, mm-hmm. Be myself in playing, not try too many things that are too outside for me. You know what I mean? But just to be, and then same thing with like my songwriting and singing and all of that. Try to have my voice and to find, you know, to stay within that authentic my voice, I guess, you know.
Yeah, very, very cool, very cool. You started a band with Casey Dreesen, Wild Child.
Yeah,
have you? Weisberger liked it. And you also did the WPA, which was the acronym the name, or was it
the Works name, Progress the acronym was the name, but we Works Progress Administration. We did clarify that that's what it stood for.
And that was with the Watkins and Glenn Phillips.
That's right.
And Ben Montench.
And Pete Thomas and Davey Farragher and Greg Leese. And yeah.
So you went from, you know, you were backing musicians to then not fronting your own band, but in this real collaborative sort of space.
Yeah.
How cool was that? I sound like Chris Farley right now. You remember that? Wasn't that sweet? How cool? I mean, I'm just like picturing. You talked a little bit when we were rehearsing today about like working up the arrangement on some of those songs, and you've got Ben Montench, who's Tom Petty's piano player. You've got and the Watkins, who are sort of as good as they get in sort of our generation. Mm-hmm. How cool was that?
It was incredible. I mean, I was going out and I was going out to participate in their Watkins Family Hour, their residency at Largo at the Cornet in Hollywood, and. It turned into just like a once a month kind of thing. I was just flying from Nashville out there, and we would stay at the band house and practice and rehearse and write and just play and jam all the time. And then we'd just go over there, and people like Jackson Brown and Fiona Apple and all these people were hanging around, and it was really a cool a collaborative kind of thing. It was we had some epic jams and some big rehearsals, and you know, with all of these musicians. But getting to be on stage there at Largo, and just the kind of the way that all happened naturally, you know, it's just people would come and go, and then we ended up starting to, you know, writing some songs together and made a record in San Fernando Valley. That was really cool because I had not got to write with Glenn Phillips yet. That was my first time writing with Glenn, and then we. yeah, being in the studio with those guys. Sarah and I did a lot of live string parts. You know, we just arranged stuff kind of on the fly and played a lot of those tracks live. It was an incredible experience being a part of that group, for sure. It's not fair. He has an extra string.
I plan ahead in case I break one.
All right. We're going to do a couple of classic Bill Monroe numbers for you. Casey Jason, everybody.
Oh, that's Luke Bulla.
Yeah. Wow. That is fun.
So, you know, now your focus, you know, child fiddle prodigy, side guy, collaborator, but now you're stepping out on your own, you're touring, you're playing a lot solo.
That's right.
What is that like, being up there all by yourself? How's that feeling?
Well, it's been really interesting, you know. Honestly, it's much different being on stage all by yourself. It's like, it's a whole different experience than being on stage with other people. And honestly, it's pretty terrifying. No, it can be, depending on the situation. But I all those years in Lyle's band, I definitely studied him and watched him and paid attention to how he was with an audience. He's just so tuned in and aware and always, you know, had something to say that was unique to the place, and, you know, just cared, genuinely cared, and like try to think about that. But being on stage by yourself without a band, it's like a whole, that's a completely different thing. And yeah, I did, I left Lyle's band a year ago. I have a 4-year-old little girl at home, and so I needed to be around a little bit more for dad duties. Yeah. So I'm doing this solo thing now, yeah, and it's a whole different ball game, but I love it. It's fun.
Have you always written songs? Has that always been part of your life?
Yes. I wrote my first fiddle tune when I was, I think I was 8 or 9. It was on, we recorded it on our, my sister and me made a fiddle album for Rounder Records when we were 9 and 10. And I wrote the fiddle tune for that one. It was called Bull Run. It's the name of a river, or a creek, or something. Anyway, it's like a Civil War reference, I think.
Do you do anything?
I was a kid. I was 8 years old. I was 9 years old.
Do you anything other than make music? Like, do you have diversions or hobbies, or is it just the music for you? Other than parenting.
Well, yeah. You know, fortunately, I'm my hobby is traveling. So
nice. You're set then, dude.
Yeah. No, I love being in the mountains. Anytime I get to be in the mountains, it's like that's my favorite kind of place and kind of environment to be in. So, you know, here, Colorado, where I'm from, Washington State. I love to winter sports, downhill snow skiing, all that kind of. I grew up doing that kind of thing. So that's big. That's close to home for sure.
My man, I can relate. What?
Yeah.
Just a few more questions, real simple. What advice would you give to your 15-year-old self? And would it change anything?
You know, that's a good question. I think, all joking aside,
I didn't give him the questions before the interview. That's kind of part of the deal.
Yeah, I'm stalling, tuning a little bit, thinking a little bit. I think that I spent a lot of time as a musician and being super serious about trying to be really technical and to execute things really cleanly and, you know, getting really into all of that stuff. I think I kind of got lost in that stuff a little bit and got a little disconnected from, you know, the what's really in it, like what the feeling in it, and where's the heart in it, you know, like I got a little bit lost, especially, I mean, being young and whatever, I got kind of lost in that pursuit of intricacy and complexity and, you know, stuff that's difficult to execute. But I don't know, I think I would probably find a way to impress upon myself the need to, like, not worry so much about what people think, you know.
yeah.
That's
legit. All right, and finally, what is it you hope for? What do you hope for?
Oh, well, oh gosh.
Maybe I should give the questions to the guest before the interview.
No, that's a big one. That's just a big one. That's like a, it is. You know, yeah, I mean, yeah, I just, I mean, of course, the first thing that comes to mind is I just wishing that we could all, you know, not be so far apart, you know. We could all the older I get and the more I learn, the more I realize how connected we all are and everything is. And to try to get more in tune with that somehow, I think would be good. But.
Thanks so much. That's Luke Bulla.
This has been the Travis Book Happy Hour podcast. Thanks for listening. Huge thanks to Luke Bulla, Casey Dreesen, Thompson Guitars, Americana Vibes, 185 King Street, and The Bluegrass Situation. If you're enjoying the podcast, please subscribe and leave a positive review. It really helps us out. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at The Travis Book Happy Hour and online at thetravisbookhappyhour.com. And remember, it's okay to be happy.